Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We observe today not a victory of party, but a celebration of freedom.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
The Human Zoo, where they don't hide away the sick animals.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the great dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
Stand to attention when I'm talking to you!
On Talk Radio.
This mess!
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. Today is the day, ladies and gentlemen, when we hurl ourselves headlong into the breach. It is the final day of Parliament until the election next month. That's 5 weeks of campaigning, canvassers on the doorsteps of the nation and TV debates all over the place. Already, the party leaders are arguing with each other about every single little cough and spit. Boris Johnson has sent a letter to Jeremy Corbyn asking him to commit to some kind of policy on leaving or remaining. Jo Swinson is busy hiring lawyers to ensure someone pays attention. Attention to her, and the leader of the opposition himself is preparing to unveil his cunning plan for Brexit should we win. We could, of course, be telling you about Jo Swinson. She's unveiling the Lib Dem sort of manifesto this morning, talking about giving us all back a load of money if they become the next government because they want to remain in the European Union. Today is also your chance to have your say on everything that is going on. Have you seen any of the fabled thousands of canvassers out on the street for the Labour Party, or indeed for any other party? Because I haven't. And how do you feel about working a four-day week of 32 hours for the same money? Sounds great, doesn't it? Just come in 4 days a week, have 3 days off. We'll give you the same money. You'll do the same amount of work. It'll just take you a smaller amount of time to do it. All it's going to cost is £17 billion, and that's just for the public sector. If you run a small business or if you run any kind of business, this is an absolute nightmare. Let the madness begin. 0344 499 1000 is the number. Coming up this morning, also, we will be hearing from Jeremy Corbyn as well as Jo Swinson. We'll also be hearing from lots and lots of other politicians throughout the course of the day, and we'll be asking why Emma Watson is now describing herself as self-partnered instead of single. Is this the ultimate in showbiz narcissism? Dawn Neeson will be helping us out with that one. 0344 499 1000. And what about the firework problem? A puppy actually died of a heart attack in Yorkshire during a firework display over the course of the last few days. I think enough is enough. I think it's time to call a halt to the ridiculous number of firework displays we now have in this country. Loads and loads and loads of them. Very noisy, very scary. Pets are literally cowering in corners, hiding under beds, getting themselves all worked up for no reason at all. Why do we need to have so many firework displays, and why do they have to be so damn loud? 0344 499 1000. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, right here on Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, if you pick up a copy of The Times this morning, you will see on their front page they have this headline: Labour's four-day week to cost taxpayers £17 billion. Now, as if the cost of that was not eye-watering enough, the idea that somehow everybody who now works a five-day week and gets squeezed into a four-day week does not cause massive job shortages and requirements for more nurses, more doctors, more police and more ambulance drivers and all the rest of it, you'd have to be absolutely crazy to think that that wasn't going to be a recipe for disaster. We've already got shortages in almost all of those jobs in the public sector. They want to create more shortages just so that people can have more leisure time. Well, I think it's a mistake. I think it's idiotic, and it doesn't even take into account what would happen to the small businesses, which are the backbone of this country. Let's talk to Robert Colville, who's director of the Centre for Policy Studies, to see what he makes of it all. Robert, very good morning to you.
Morning.
Thanks very much for joining us. I mean, you know, I suppose if you went up to 10 people in the street and said, how would you like to work 4 days instead of five, 32 hours instead of 36 hours or something, they'd all go, yeah, great idea. But unfortunately, the cost, I think, to the country would be ridiculously high, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, this is our sort of rough estimate of this Labour promise, just for the public sector. So over the next 10 years, to shift everyone onto a 4 day week. The problem is, there's no evidence there's really no evidence, especially in the public sector, that cutting people's hours makes them more productive to that extent. So the 17 billion figure we use is actually, if you make really really generous assumptions that everyone who works 4 days a week suddenly gets more efficient because they stop checking Facebook all the time.
Yeah.
Actually, if you just say, actually, everyone's just going to work at the same level they are at the moment, and we're just going to give everyone a 4 day week, at that point, you need to spend £45 billion, which is, you know, the entire defence budget.
Well, don't worry. That's nothing compared to the amount of money they want to spend on sort of renationalising loads of our industries as well. But, I mean, it does seem to me to be ridiculous because we now live in this rather gilded world where everything comes to us quite easily. Nothing is terribly hard to achieve. I know that there will be people listening to this radio station now saying, well, hang on a minute, I haven't got all the things that I want. But most people are relatively well off compared to the 1970s, which seems to be a time when people are starting to kind of compare things too, you know, particularly those on the left who say, oh, yeah, it was great in the 70s. I'm very amused by people who weren't even alive in the 70s telling me how great it was in the 70s, because let me tell you, it wasn't great.
Yeah, and but I think also just in terms of the public sector, I'm not against the idea that if everyone works smarter, they work smarter and harder, they can cut their hours. That's great. But over the last 20 years, productivity growth in the public sector is 0.2% a year.
Yeah.
So which is basically, you know, it's basically nothing. So the idea that, you know, the idea that suddenly the Labour Party is going to get in and suddenly everyone in the public sector is going to sort of stand up and salute and start working, you know, 20% more efficiently than they were under the Tories is nonsense, especially when you consider that, you know, Labour also wants to, you know, give massive power to the trade unions, you know, collective bargaining and make it much harder to get rid of underperforming staff. You know, it's really hard to see this as a recipe for a, you know, an efficiency revolution.
And is this part of the sort of the Labour campaign rather than the reality? I see that as part of what John McDonnell's now saying. He's saying we're doing away with this idea of taking back private schools. That's not what we're about. We're about trying to kind of integrate it better. So they've already taken a step back from the sort of the shutting down of private schools and basically making a land grab for everything they own. So is this another promise that we might see? We were told yesterday by doctors, you know, stop making promises about the NHS that you can't keep. That would be a good mantra for all politicians and all issues, wouldn't it?
Indeed. Yeah, so with Labour, I think there's a different... The code word they use in their speeches is in the first 100 days. If they say in the first 100 days, that kind of means we're definitely going to do this. And that's a, you know, that's a sort of pretty heavy, massive laundry list in the first place. And then on top of that, they have all of these other things. Like every week they seem to come out with a new, like, we're going to spend $200 billion on this, $20 billion on this. We're going to transform the, you know, we're going to build, you know, more wind farms than have ever been built by any country in the world ever before. We're going to, you know, solar panels on every home, insulation on every home. You know, just every, you know, they're coming up with all these things. It's like, and when you start adding up the numbers, it is genuinely eye-watering. I mean, you know, quite a lot of these things would be really nice to have. I'd love to work a 4 day week and get the same amount of money.
But you see, a lot of people have said to me whenever I've talked about this in the past that actually, if they only worked a 4 day week in one job, they'd probably get a part-time job because nobody really wants 3 days of leisure time, because apart from anything else, leisure time can be quite expensive. So in fact, if you even got the same money for working a 4 day week, you'd have to spend more of that money occupying yourself and your children or whatever else during the other 3 days.
Well, I sometimes find looking after my children all day is rather more labour-intensive.
Well, listen, I mean, I'm one of those people who was given... When I had my... I think it was my third child, I was allowed to have 2 weeks off for paternity leave. I came back after a week because I was like, I'd rather be at work, thanks. This is far too taxing and difficult for me, you know, and wearing and frustrating and annoying and all of that. So I went back to work, and I think a lot of people would rather work a proper 5 day week.
I mean, one of the secrets, actually, one of the sort of the weird things about the working environment is that actually, you know, it's not that bad to be at work these days. You know, we've made it quite nice to be. So there was a US company which did all this stuff. They sort of said to everyone, you know, you can work from home, you can work flexible hours. You know, we're going to be really, really modern and progressive. And then they sort of came back a year later and said, look, why is no one actually doing this? And the answer that everyone gave was actually, you know, we quite like being in the office. It's quite a nice office.
Yeah.
We like being in a team. We get productive stuff done.
Well, here's an interesting a twist on it as well from somebody who just tweeted me called The Royal Blue, saying, trust me, if you reduce the civil servants' working week, they'll only get those people to do overtime. They won't recruit, so they'll still be working for overtime at ex gratia rates. So, that's a good point, isn't it?
Yeah, and also, actually, the dirty secret is that quite a lot of the civil service, especially in the Whitehall bit, I'm not talking about the nurses and teachers and people out in the coalface, but in some of the government departments, they're already de facto on a 4 day week because they work this thing called compressed hours.
Oh yeah,
which basically means that you say that you're working, you know, as many hours as a 5 day week, you're just doing it Monday to Thursday, and then on Friday you bunk off.
Yeah, well, I've definitely noticed, and I'm not going to say this is entirely down to the public sector, but on a Friday, generally speaking, now in London, public transport is much less busy than it is on every other day. So I think there's a lot of people not working or working from home on Fridays.
Yeah, I think one reason we all feel that we're working longer hours is because we've all got mobile phones, right?
So you're
not able to switch off. When you go home, you're still checking your email, you're still sending a few things back and forth. So you're always engaged with work. But actually, in terms of actual number of hours worked, it's fairly static over the last like 20 years or whatever.
Mm. No, that's interesting as well. And what about sort of other countries that have tried this? Because I'm pretty sure the last time this was raised as a sort of balloon floated by somebody in the Labour Party. I think there was some country in Scandinavia where they claimed that everybody was happier, where they claimed that everybody had much more kind of downtime, more family time, and therefore their production was higher in the office when they were there. But, I mean, the trouble is with comparing us to Scandinavia is we're a very different people, aren't we?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what's weird about it is that the paper Labour are relying on for this policy explicitly says that, you know, it looks at France where they did this. And it explicitly says that in France, when they did this, they found they had real problems with their hospitals because, you know, they said everyone in a hospital can work a 35-hour week.
Yeah.
And all the doctors said, you know, has to work a 35-hour week. And then they found they didn't have enough staff because, you know, professions like medicine, like social care, where it's like really kind of hands-on, you actually need to, you know, actually engage with people, it's much harder to automate them. It's much harder to like get robots to do that kind of stuff. So you can't. So what in France they found that they did this and they didn't have enough doctors.
Yeah. Well, we haven't got enough doctors already. So I mean, it's hard enough to get an appointment with the GP. Can you imagine if the GP that now is seeing people 5 days a week only sees people 4 days a week?
Exactly.
It's not going to work well at all. So, I mean, you know, who does this appeal to, I suppose, is the next question, because clearly the Labour Party will think that this will get them votes, which is why they've put it out there, even if it never comes to pass. People will go, oh, yeah, but the Labour Party want us to work less, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, so I think there's still a limit to that. I think there's that element of appealing to the public, who would obviously like to get a bit more of a free ride, but also the trade unions. You know, the Labour Party is bought and paid for by the trade unions.
Yeah.
This is something they've been fanatical about trying to drive the number of working hours of their members down, because they sort of, you know, there's a limit to the amount of, if you reach a limit of the amount of cash you can extract from the employer, then you start saying, okay, well, in that case we'll just work less.
Yes.
So they're campaigning for. So this is quite a good policy for them. It's core vote, and it keeps the paymasters happy.
And they're sort of only really hinting at the fact that they might have to raise taxes, because they're talking about raising taxes to something like 67.5% for highest earners. I don't know what they would categorise as high earners, because in previous Labour administrations, they've categorised high earners as people making more than $60,000 a year.
Yeah, and Labour in their response to the Times today, to our research, is to say this will be done from higher productivity across the workforce.
Right.
So we will just make everyone work so much better that everyone can afford to take an extra day off. But think about that. So what you're saying is that over the next 10 years, you succeed in making every doctor, teacher, civil servant in the country, you know, 20% better at doing their job. You get 20% more out of them. And instead of turning that into better services for the taxpayer and the public and the customer, you know, and the people, you know, and the pupils and the patients and the rest of it, you turn that into letting people take more time off. You know, that's a great deal for the people who you're letting take more time off. It's not a great deal for the people who are actually using their public services.
No, because all of this flexi time is interesting as well. I was saying to someone earlier this morning that I had a job once where I had a secretary who took time off to have a baby. She came back, but only wanted to work half the week. So I had basically a job share, which was what the company I worked for at the time did. And it was hopeless, because I never knew which one of them had done whatever it was that I was referring to when I was talking to the other one. And they'd always have to ring each other on the days that they weren't in order to find out what had happened the day before. You know, it was a kind of chaotic way to run an office.
I mean, I'm actually not as down on flexitime as you are. I think, you know, if people have family commitments, if they want to do things, we should try.
Yeah, but there's no point pretending it's the same and it's as good, though, Robert. That's my point.
Well, there's definitely no point in, you know, flexi time is a very different thing from just like saying everyone only gets to work a 4 day week.
Right. No, it is. But it's partly feeding into the same narrative that, you know, you can be more efficient by working less. You know, and that's a great idea, and it sounds good, and it sounds, even as I'm saying it sounds really good, but you know it isn't true.
It's true once you get to really high hours. If you're working like north of 40 hours a week.
Yeah.
You know, if you're working, if you're really kind of pushing yourself and pushing yourself nose to the grindstone stuff, then actually you are probably not being as, you know, not being as productive as you should be. You could get better results by pulling back, but there's not really much evidence to show that pulling back from like 40 hours a week to 32 hours a week. It improves productivity, and there's really no evidence for showing that applies to the public sector.
Exactly.
I mean, if there is, I'd love to see it. But we look quite hard for some papers, and even Labour's own policy document doesn't have any evidence at all that effect works. It says what it says is that as we become more productive, people can cut their hours. It doesn't say if you cut people's hours, they will become more productive.
Right. Yeah, it's the cart before the horse. How about this from David? He says, "Will this mean that kids only have a 4-day school week?" Good question. How does that work?
Again, I think the parents would rise up in revolt.
Well, exactly. I mean, imagine if that did happen, you'd have to get the parents to kind of make sure that they were off the same day as the kids were off, in order that they didn't have to get childcare for those children, which would cost them more money, and then everybody would be asking for the same days off a week who had children, and then you'd end up with a kind of ridiculous scenario where the people who had people who were parents would have to work different days to the people who weren't, thereby creating all sorts of resentments.
Yeah, no, completely.
You know, you already
get that way when it comes around to Christmas. You know, the guys with, you know, the people with all school holidays. The family, people with kids. You know, book in early, and everyone else has to do the nasty hours.
Yeah, or pay through the nose to take the kids out of school and get fined and take them somewhere where they can actually afford to go for a holiday. It's all madness, isn't it? Robert, appreciate your time. Thank you very much indeed. Robert Colville, Director of the Centre for Policy Studies, who have worked out that this 4-day week nonsense the Labour Party have come up with is in fact not just nonsense, but rather expensive nonsense as well. Here's one from Joe, who says, "I do compressed hours. It's hard sometimes getting up at 4 a.m, but it's nice to have a longer weekend." I don't really understand what compressed hours are. I presume you mean that you work all of your working week into sort of, say, 3 days rather than into 5 days. If you prefer that, that's fine. But I guess that's about hours rather than about the amount of work that you do, isn't it?
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the Great Dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
I am beautiful no matter what.
Imagine being Emma Watson, right? Child actress, multi-millionaire, a woman who was able to go to Columbia University in New York and do whatever the hell she wanted. I think she's been an ambassador for the United Nations. She has also got, apparently, one of the largest carbon footprints of any celebrity in the entire world. Apparently now, she does no longer describe herself as single because she prefers to use the phrase self-coupled. Which seems entirely ridiculous, right? Seems entirely crazy. We're going to talk now to Dawn Neeson, journalist, Daily Star columnist, Woman's Own columnist, TV star of stage and screen. Dawn, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike.
I think I'm very well indeed. I think I've heard it all now, haven't I? I mean, the conscious uncoupling between Gwyneth Paltrow and Chris Martin was one thing. This surely is the final kind of act of narcissism, isn't it? Self-love.
It's just gone utterly bonkers, hasn't it, Mike? I mean, you know, I can think of several phrases to describe Emma, beginning with the word self, like self-centred, self-obsessed, self-absorbed.
Yeah.
You know, disappearing up her own backside, I think, fits very well here. You know, she's come up with this to describe how she feels about being 30. She's 30 beginning of next year.
Well, those are the days.
Yeah, exactly. Well, tell me about it. Yeah, get over it, love. So she's nearing 30 has made her anxious about being single and childless. And she thinks there's this terrible pressure on women that if you haven't got a husband and you haven't got a family, you haven't got a house, she's got a few houses, by the time you're 30, then there is something wrong with that, something to be anxious about. No, make the most of it. Instead, she's sitting there gazing at her own navel, coming up with things like happily self-partnered. Now, part of me sort of hopes she's having a bit of joke here, but I don't think she is.
I don't think so. No, I don't think she's got much of a sense of humour. This is a woman who's worth 60 million quid, right? Now, the idea that she sits around comparing herself to ordinary members of the public, like your average 29-year-old woman who's working as hard as she possibly can to make as much money as she can to even exist in a city like London or New York or Paris or wherever, you know, she's not like an ordinary 29-year-old. She's a multi-millionaire.
But then this is her problem, Mike. She needs something proper to worry about.
Yeah.
Instead, because as you say, she's got everything, you know, she's beautiful, she's talented, you know, she's got the world at her feet. But she needs something proper to worry about. Like we've all got, you know, like paying a bill or something or other. Instead, she's, oh my God, you know, a single. What is wrong with being single in any case, Mike?
Why There's nothing wrong with it. I've been single many times in my life, as I'm sure you have. I know you've been married for a very long time, though.
I was trying to think of something funny to describe being happily married, but there's not actually that much funny about it, really.
I didn't know you were that happily married, to be honest. I just thought you were married. I mean, you know, been married for so long.
Married, exactly.
I mean,
maybe that is a contradiction in terms, indeed.
But, I mean, there's certainly many women nowadays who become single after their children have left home and after their long-term marriage has fallen apart. And they're the ones that probably are struggling more than poor Ms. Emma Watson. You know, women of say, 45, 50, who are back on the single market for the first time since they were 20.
What, Mike? Most of the women I know who are sort of like, you know, roughly my age, let's say, who are sort of like back on the market, as you put it. I mean, they're confident, they have pride in themselves. They don't need to reduce to this utter gobbledygook talk to describe themselves. They're single, they're happy in being single. I mean, let's face it, you don't really need a man in your life in any case these days, really. I mean,
imagine why you would.
You can even put the bins out yourself, Mike. I know it's a bit of a shocker, but it is possible.
Listen, I've got children for that. This is one of the reasons you have children. I've said this many times to people. I said, you have children, then make them work. That's what they're for.
You can't mention children in Emma's presence because she's obviously seriously anxious about being childless at the moment. But, I mean, obviously all this is to promote her new film, which is called Little Women, which I'm sure some people will find offensive because you're defining a gender.
Yes. But I'm surprised they're to rename it, actually.
Well, I think they should, actually, yeah, the non-gender specific.
Or little people who identify as women.
Yeah, well, you can't say little. I mean, people of diminished stature.
Possibly, yeah.
Oh, God knows.
Vertically challenged.
Yeah, challenged. She's describing meeting her co-stars, Laura Dern and Meryl Streep, in activist spaces.
Oh, yeah. Where are these activist spaces?
What does that actually mean, Mike? I have no idea.
Do you know what? I'm starting to read things, and I'm sorry to say that some of them come to me in email form from various people, some of whom may or may not, maybe people I work for. And you read the language, and you go, I don't understand what this means.
I don't understand what you're saying.
What are they saying?
I know, I really don't. And I was, you know, the other day, Mike, this was my favourite one. Like, someone asked me if I wanted a cup of tea, right?
Now, yeah.
You can't take offence at that, surely.
Surely not.
And I said, oh, yeah, builders, please, builders tea.
Yeah.
And they go, I'm not sure you can say that anymore. And I thought,
you can't offend builders.
You can't say builders, it's offensive. You're defining something that you can't define anymore.
That's mad.
I know, totally. And I thought, oh, you've got to be joking. And I looked at them and I was thinking, no, they're not actually joking. This is serious.
Mm.
Yeah,
absolutely right. I mean, the ridiculous thing is now that we now live in a world where instead of the celebrities remembering that we are the ones that pay them,
exactly,
they are now lecturing us and telling us how to live, even though we don't have their money. You know, we don't have the ability to get Elton John's private jet wherever we want to go. We're not able to do any of that. You can't just take off and say, oh, I know, not that I'm having to go at the royal couple, but, you know, I think I'll go and watch the Rugby World Cup final.
Oh,
just jump
yeah.
off on a plane to Japan. Do you need to take any time off, Prince Harry? No, don't worry. I'll just talk to the boss.
They work so incredibly hard, Mike, and they are having that sort of, like, 6 weeks off, fully paid, to go and sort of, like, get over their stress and find themselves, Harry and Meghan. So.
Mm.
You know, obviously, this is something you and I can do at the drop of a hat, should we feel like it.
Yes. Now, she's also come up with another word, has Emma Watson, allyship. So she says that she has...
Say that slower.
It's nothing to do with Star Wars. She says, I have... when she was talking about meeting Laura Dern and Meryl Streep in these activist spaces, apparently they had allyship.
Allyship.
Which is a bit like, presumably that means, like, is that like friendship, except you can't say friend anymore?
Right, okay. So I figure, Mike, this is like if you and I went to the pub and sort of had a chat and were mates, that's what it means, isn't it?
Is
you
it?
Have an allyship in a safe space.
Ah, and solidarity as well.
Solidarity, right, yeah.
Mine's a pint of Harvey's.
I love a Peroni, thank you very much. But, I mean, it's just utter rubbish.
It's garbage, isn't it?
Why can't people just say what they mean? And especially celebrities. I mean, it really is a case of absolutely disappearing up their own back someways. It really is.
And also, Emma Watson is a very attractive young woman, a very wealthy young woman with a lot of influence. There's a lot of things she could say that would help, you know, the girls going to school in East London today. You know, things that she could say to encourage them to be something, you know?
Well, this is... There's a serious point to this. I mean, you can take the mickey out of Emma, of course you can. But, I mean, the thing is, you know, there are young women out there who are struggling, and there's a lot of pressures on especially young women these days.
Yeah.
And it's like she could be so much more positive and encouraging and say things that actually resonate with young women who do look up to her. I mean, you know, the generation below her have grown up with Harry Potter and think she's marvellous and, you know, and really look up to her for being an example. And she comes out with this utter claptrap. Why can't she be more constructive? More helpful, more pointing out,
yes.
You know, there's nothing wrong with being 29 and single. There's nothing to be anxious about. 29, you are in your prime. You've got a whole life out there. Go and live it, girls.
Here's a good one, right? Karen has tweeted, if she's self-partnered, what happens when she enters a relationship? Does she have to separate from a part of herself? Or is she going to cheat on herself or practice bigamy?
Well, indeed. I mean, which
so it gets complicated.
Separate from as well?
Well, it's very complicated, this, isn't it? So, you see, you enter a whole new era and sort of area of difficulty, I think you'd have to say.
Oh, blimey, Mike, I'm glad I am married
yes.
to a man, if you're allowed to do that sort of thing, and quite happily so, because I couldn't cope with all this.
I know, an absolute nightmare. Well, if your happily married husband allows you out for a drink with me, I'd be delighted to buy you one before Christmas. I promise to send you home.
I think we can, what's the phrase she uses again?
Activist spaces?
Activist spaces. I think we can find an activist space and discuss this terminology.
Yes, and I'll try and send you home sober, okay?
Oh, and by the way, I just wanted to congratulate you on your independent rugby of Mike Graham election debate.
Thank you very much indeed. It's going to be
I'm looking forward to watching it properly. And you look rather hot in that suit.
Thank you very much.
I know.
And somebody just said I might actually break Twitter. There's so many people liking it. But I don't, that's probably a bit over the top. But what can I do? You know, just put a tie on and it changes everything. This is Talk Radio.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
More gun talk from a water pistol from the Farmer of Fury.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
On Talk Radio.
This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. You know what to do. 0344 499 1000. Somebody called Ian O'Hanlon is not happy. He says, has someone kidnapped Mike and replaced him with a bedwetting lefty? Legislation to control the use of fireworks is ridiculous. My dogs are absolutely fine because we don't make a massive deal when a firework goes off. Also, what happened to freedom of choice? Well, you don't have freedom of choice in everything, Ian, I'm afraid. And all I'm saying is I'm not asking for legislation, just better regulation. I don't think there's any need for ordinary members of the public to let off fireworks. And I really don't see why one day of the year, November the 5th, which is the traditional and absolutely obvious day on which to have a firework display, has grown into 2 months of it. I just don't think it's right. I just think it's over the top. So by all means, argue with me if you want. But don't worry. I have not become a lefty. Trust me. Let's talk to Ross in Putney. Hello, Ross.
Hello, Mike. How are you doing?
Yeah, very well. What do you want to say?
Quickly on Joe Swinson. I'm absolutely... Well, I can't wait for somebody from the Liberal Democrats to come round my door. Because I'm going to ask them, the fact that they're neither liberal nor democratic,
yes.
What are they going to be called next week? I mean, it's just, I can't believe what they're getting away with.
I know.
It's actually making me angry.
It is. Incredible. It's incredible, isn't it? As if the election or the referendum didn't happen.
Well, exactly. It's amazing. But the main thing was fireworks. Because we've got three cats, amongst other things. And You just mentioned just before I came on about the fact that it's a couple of months a year.
Yeah.
Well, where I am, it's all year. You could be sitting there in the middle of the summer and everyone's quite happy, and all of a sudden a load of fireworks.
Yeah.
Off.
Yeah. And this is the thing. And I mean, when I was a kid, it was November the 5th. That was great. Everybody looked forward to it. It was
right.
One day of the year. Now it's ridiculous.
And you used to go to a display. People didn't really used to. You'd let a few bangers off, but that was about it. And that was it, one day a year. I mean, our cats, two of them especially, get really, really stressed. And we actually have to get them in as it gets dark. Because they like going out, obviously. But you've got to get them in. because they are, and one of them is so sensitive, you pick him up and he's shaking. And he's really a cuddly cat as well.
Yeah.
So you actually have to, it's like when you've got a newborn baby, he really doesn't like it.
And no, of course. And also, one of the things that we heard the other day from one of the dog trusts was that a lot of dogs are killed on fireworks night because of the fact that they run off and they get run over by cars.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And we have always, my wife and I, you know, we've always been very sensitive about this. I'm pleased you've talked about it because this has been going on for years. And I don't know where it all started, because as you quite rightly said, it used to be, you know, Guy Fawkes Day, because, you know, it was always penny for the guy, wasn't it, when you grew up?
That's it.
Penny for the guy, and it was all about fireworks. It was all about Guy Fawkes.
Yeah.
Now, I just find it, they have to be regulated, and why on earth people have to let off a couple of fireworks is just beyond me.
I know. It's crazy. It's absolutely ridiculous. Ross, I'm going to let you go, because we've got lots to do. Marie is in Castleford in West Yorkshire. Hello, Marie.
Good morning, mate. Morning. Happy bonfire night.
Thank you. And to you. Are you going to a fireworks display later?
I am, yeah. And I don't often agree with you, Mr. Graham, but I do on this one, I'm sorry to say.
You mean disagree
don't
with
shout
me?
At me because I
you
don't
mean you disagree often. With me, don't you?
I do disagree.
Yes,
yeah, I do
go on
disagree,
then.
Yeah.
That's all right. You're allowed to disagree with me. That's what, you know, democracy is all about.
No, I don't have any pets myself. And I just think it's your prerogative to have a dog. And it's my
Thank
prerogative
you.
To enjoy a bonfire.
Scaring the hell out of him.
Sorry?
It's your prerogative to enjoy scaring the hell out of my dog.
Yeah, it is, yeah. Because you choose to have a dog and I choose to enjoy a bonfire.
Yeah, well, my dog doesn't come into your house and start barking and leaving his droppings behind, does he? Whereas your fireworks invade my house.
Yeah, but sometimes I do have to put up with that, mate. We have dogs near us where owners leave them in the house all day and the
yeah,
back
that's
and all
true.
Day.
And that's very bad,
you know,
dog ownership.
Social behaviour, that can happen at any time of year just the same.
Yes.
But I do think it's the owner's responsibility that if the dogs... I did used to have a dog as I was growing up, and it did used to get frightened, and we used to kind of make it a tent and, you know, just comfort it, really. But I just think as a pet owner, you know that it's bonfire. I agree with you fully on the antisocial behaviour.
Listen, Marie, here's the thing. All I'm saying, I'm not saying you can't have any fireworks. I'm just saying, why can't we go back to what it was like when you had firework displays on November the 5th and that was it? Okay, maybe I'll give you New Year's Eve as well. But you don't need to have one going on, which is what happens now in this country, from more or less the beginning of October all the way through to the end of November. It's too much.
You see, we don't have that. I don't have that where I live. We've had a lot of organised displays, and I do agree they've gone on like Friday, Saturday, and then there are some this evening as well. So I fully agree with the antisocial behaviour. But, I mean, I did go out and enjoy one on Saturday night. It's a free community event. It was organised by the local council. We don't get anything out of the council back. There was tens of thousands of people there enjoying it. They did a quiet display for the younger children at 6:30 and then a big display for the adults at 8:30. And I really enjoyed it. You know, I love fireworks. I love to see them. And I understand and I do empathise with dog owners and cat owners.
Yeah, well, why can't we find a happy medium, Marie? Because that's what we should be doing. That's all I say.
Yeah, well, maybe so, but I just get sick of all these people that are like dictators what come on and they call up and they're like, right, well, we should ban them. My dog's scared and I don't care about anybody else. I just care about my dog and what I think and that's it. I just think they don't have the open-mindedness that, like, yeah, some people do enjoy going out. You know, that chap that you've just had on with the dogs driving up and down the motorway. I mean, my God, it was like such a saga and such a story. For God's sake, it's just bonfire night.
All right. Mary, I've got to go, but great call. Thank you very much. Listen, we are all reasonable people in this country. We used to be. I'm not calling for the banning of anything. I'm calling for a bit more reasonableness. And I think if we were all a bit more reasonable, everybody would be happier in the long run, in every way.
More gun talk from a water pistol from the Farmer of Fury.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
On Talk Radio.
Monday to Friday. Monday to Friday. I'm in a hurry, got a million to make. Monday to Friday, Monday to Friday. The more I earn, the more the tax man takes.
This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. Matthew Wright coming up at 1 o'clock, of course. Now, there's been an interesting sort of study done, a little puzzle in which the best British things have been put into a scene, effectively, and passers-by were tested on whether they thought things were placed on the list of the things that are best about Britain. The video has been made as well, in which more than two-thirds apparently reckon Brits are better at queuing than any other nation in the world. Well, it's not so much that we are better at queuing. I think it's the fact that we are actually the only people who queue. Because if you go abroad, basically people don't queue for anything at all, or at least not in the sort of way that we do. But let's talk to Grant Howard, the Royal Butler, because he is the king of etiquette and the man who knows more about probably what's great about Britain, perhaps, than anybody else. Grant, a very good afternoon to you. Welcome.
Good afternoon, son. I'm glad to see on this list it's got Mike Graham's radio show as one of the best things about being British.
Well, listen, I couldn't possibly comment on that. But, I mean, look at this. We've got Buckingham Palace. We've got roast dinners. We've got queuing, which I think is hilarious. The royal family, very British. Big Ben, although I have to say, having spent a lot of time in Westminster this year, I never failed to be surprised at the sort of the shock and the awe that people see when they come out of Westminster Tube and see that Big Ben's all covered up and you can't actually see it.
I know. That's the sad bit, isn't it? When you go past, I noticed that recently as well. It's like kind of as if there's going to be an unveiling, hopefully, soon.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I don't know how... I mean, the one thing I would say, which is bad about Britain, and I know we're only talking about good things, is the amount of time it takes to clean these buildings, because the whole of Westminster seems to have wrapped in brown paper for the best part of about 2 years.
It's true, and I have, like all of us, many friends that have come over to the UK, and that's one of the things they say is, why is that iconic building covered up? And of course, the work has to get done, I understand that, but it's just a shame because obviously people come along to see Big Ben and suddenly there's no Big Ben.
Yes, exactly right. Now, what about obviously things like the NHS, which is very much at the heart of the election campaign, which is lovely. Yeah. Afternoon tea, of course.
Afternoon tea, absolutely. I was doing one of those yesterday up in Scotland.
Now, do you have a preferred type of tea for afternoon tea?
Do you know, I'm a bit of a fan of Earl Grey.
Are you? Okay.
I am.
I go with that.
Fantastic.
Could you do English breakfast tea in the afternoon?
Now, there's the question. And how many establishments ask you that very question? You'll be sitting down, they'll suddenly say, would you like some breakfast tea? And you've got to quickly look at your watch and think, is it not the afternoon?
Yes. Yes, and that doesn't sound right to me, but you know, I'm a quite big fan of Darjeeling as well.
Absolutely. And I think traditionally... I mean, back in the day in the kind of grand old homes, they used to give you a choice of Indian or China. That was the two options, like your Assam or, as I said, your Earl Grey. Where today, with so many different varieties, but see, this is the thing, we talk about being British, people love afternoon teas, and as you know, that's a big part of my job. I go around, not just the country, the world, teaching people how to have afternoon teas.
Mm.
And it is. It's something that's quite unique to Britain.
It really is. And scones are also on the list because, of course, there are many different ways of eating scones and many different things to have with scones. For example, I'd be interested in Sussex, for example. They're very keen on those cheese scones, which are quite nice, but for me, not quite as traditional as the main regular type of scones with raisins in.
It's interesting, again, because that's a huge debate.
Mm.
So, for example, yesterday, as soon as I said, let's have a chat about scone etiquette, there's gasps around the room.
Yes.
Because they know what I'm going to be asking them, who likes the jam and who likes
the... Well, I'm jam first. Cream. I am.
Are you jam first? Yeah. See, that's the Cornish way, where obviously in Devon, traditionally, it's the other way around.
Right.
And I've always said, I'm very diplomatic, I've always said that wherever you are in somebody else's home, or if you're in Devon or Cornwall, you do it that way. You don't have to do it the other way.
Yes, no, quite. And what do you make of the queuing one as well? Because I have I've never seen a proper queue, really.
Never seen a proper queue.
In any other part of the world. The only time, if you see people queuing, if you're in Mexico... it's at the airport and the British people are queuing. If it's in Spain, same. You know, the Spanish don't know how to queue, the French don't know how to queue, the Americans don't know how to queue.
Well, you know. I'm glad you've mentioned this because, as I say, I've just come back from Scotland. I just came from the airport this morning.
Yes.
And as I came off the plane, there was a queue, and then I noticed as we were going into the terminal, the queue, suddenly you had people kind of walking a bit faster, people overtaking. It turned into a bit of a kind of a rally at one point.
Mm.
And I thought, wait, what's happened to the queuing system? Why are we all suddenly... You know, we're going to get there. Don't worry, we will get into the building.
Yes, I mean that's the problem, isn't it, with these with what they used to call festival seating in sort of venues when you went to see rock bands and stuff like that, and people would suddenly get through the doors and just run so they could get down to the front. I would always be going, well, that's not very British. What are you doing?
No, I'm quite funny about the queue thing. I always make sure that I queue properly, and like everybody, I think it's true to say if you see somebody suddenly jump in front of you, you do raise an eyebrow. You know, you do think, oh, really? And I normally don't say anything, normally.
Yes.
But if you end up with a few people doing it, you do at one point kind of say, am I invisible?
Yes. No, I had a very interesting one of an old lady who sort of nipped in front of me at Sainsbury's the other week. And I thought, well, because she's elderly, I'm not going to give her a hard time.
So I
let it go. But then I was standing behind her in the queue. And her sort of stuff was moving on down the belt, and I was waiting to unload my stuff because there wasn't any room, and I was just doing something on my phone, and she started giving me a hard time because she said, you know, well, if you're not going to fill that spot, you can have somebody come in front of you. And
no.
I looked at her and I went, what you mean, like you did? You know.
Oh, well done.
So, you know, but by the end of it, being very British, of course, we ended up having a very nice conversation how horrible it is to go shopping on a Saturday.
You disappointed me. I thought you were going to say about the weather.
Well, really funny awful. Enough, the weather is counted by, not on this particular list, but by
it's
some
not.
People as very, very indicative of one of the best things about being British. Because the great thing about the weather here is when it is nice, and I'm looking out a window now to the sunny weather outside in London, which I'm sure is not the case everywhere, you feel a lot better in the sunshine here.
You do, which is why I'm heading off to Los Angeles in a couple of days.
Nice.
To escape the winter. I've had
enough. Hang on. Are you sure it's not going to be on fire or something?
I mean, well, I've been assured by my friends that where I'm going to be, I'm safe. It might be. It should hopefully be okay. So I have double checked.
Now I've got one here from Stu, who's from your part of the world in Scotland. He says, "Can we add Tunnock's caramel wafers, please, to the best things from Britain?"
Oh, I actually think I've got to agree with that.
I would go with that. Yeah,
I'm a Tunnock's fan, and I did actually before you said that. I noticed in the list they've got digestive biscuits.
Yes,
isn't that a classic? Digestive.
I do like a digestive, yeah. My sister came to visit me, funnily enough, last week and the week before, and her favourite thing to eat for a midnight snack is a chocolate digestive biscuit and a peach yoghurt.
Oh, okay.
Together. Which is quite strange.
Interesting combination. But
and the
I'm
London
sure
Marathon makes it as well. What about that?
Does it? I haven't even noticed that.
Yeah, the London Marathon apparently is one
absolutely.
Of the things that people love about Britain, which is nice in a way.
I like that. And the barbecues in the rain, I love that because I actually know people that do have barbecues in the rain, in the snow, in sleet. I've been there. I've had those barbecues. I know that they happen.
Yes. Well, do you know, I'm going to be away this Christmas and we're thinking it might be tricky to have the sort of traditional Christmas dinner scenario. So I've already offered up the possibility of a barbecued Christmas dinner.
Oh,
which might be complicated to do, but possible.
I'm sure it'll look lovely. I mean, and hopefully if there's not too much snow.
Yeah, well, exactly. I think it'll be fine. But you're right. I mean, people stand out in the rain with umbrellas over them, cooking barbecued food because we're going to be a barbecue. It's like you can't move it inside because you promised everyone it was going to be barbecue.
Exactly. So, you know, it's a really interesting list. I like it. I mean, there's things, as you said, there's things that obviously they've kind of missed off, but I think they've covered quite a lot, and even right down to the seaside.
Mm. Yeah, the British seaside, you can't beat it, can you? I mean, it's one of those things, Bank Holiday Monday, sitting in your car on the promenade as the rain is battering down onto the bonnet and eating a ham sandwich that you brought with you.
Exactly. But you see, this is the thing about us Brits, you know, that's the kind of things we do, and we're famous for it.
Yes.
You know, that's what's really important, is that when you have visitors that come over to the country, these are the kind of things they ask. And I get asked as well, you know, with the classes, they'll ask, do you go to the seaside? And I'm thinking, well, yes, on occasions.
Yes.
Not every weekend.
No, absolutely not. But listen, I mean, this is why, obviously, the British are so easily identifiable whenever they go abroad. Have a great time in LA, Grant. If anything happens over there, we may have to call you up and get you as our man on the spot in Los Angeles. Grant Harold, the Royal Butler. Charming, charming fellow. And, of course, the king of etiquette in all manner of ways. Coming up tomorrow, it's more from the Independent Republic of Mike Graham from 10 o'clock. Go and have a look at YouTube. You'll see the Mike Graham election debate that we filmed yesterday. See who's going to win.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday on Talk Radio, via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. If you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.